ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you have a favourite book that applies to work? One that's really made a difference to your work life or changed the way you see things? Yep, me too. In fact, I have three. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong and you're listening to This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. ABC Radio National's countdown of the top 100 books of the 21st century is on Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th of October. And if you're listening after this date, you can go to the ABC Radio National website to get all the results and interviews. So my book picks for the top 100 are all non-fiction, and of course most of them apply to work. We're going to explore a few of them with co-founder and editorial director of the Next Big Idea Club, Panio Giannopoulos, and he's going to tell us about his picks as well. Hello, Panio.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be here.
So for those who don't know about the Next Big Idea Club, can you tell us about it?
Sure. We're a nonfiction-oriented book club, and we pick kind of the big, new, groundbreaking books as they're coming out, everything from psychology to leadership to, I don't know, all the other personal development. You know, there are a lot of sort of cross-genre books that make a big splash. And we've been around for, gosh, maybe 7-8 years now. So I personally, since I kind of vet all the books, I must have read hundreds of nonfiction books in the past 7-8 years.
And you've got quite a team that curates the Next Big Idea Club as well.
Right. So our final curators, the ones that actually look at the finalists, are Adam Grant, Susan Cain, Dan Pink, and Malcolm Gladwell, obviously all big writers on their own. And so they get to kind of look at the top 10 every season.
So let's start with one of your first picks, Panio. It's The Work of Art, How Something Comes from Nothing by Adam Moss. Can you tell us about this one?
Absolutely. I loved this book so much when it came out. It is essentially a collection of really in-depth interviews that Adam Moss has with artists across every field. So you've got dancers, photographers, writers, painters, everything. So Adam Moss had all this access because he was this longtime New York Magazine editor. So we kind of knew everybody. And they're incredibly candid interviews, and you get to really see behind the scenes. You get to see first drafts of things that you never knew about, and you learn about all these kind of weird side, odd little diversions and messy iterations of these super famous moments in movies and books. Just as a fan, it's exciting, but I'm also a writer, a fiction writer, and it's very kind of reassuring and inspiring because we all pretend that we're more put together than we actually are. But then you see people just admitting to all these struggles and how these great works of art were just almost abandoned sometimes because they're so challenging that, it gave me a renewed hope and a renewed appreciation for that creative process.
As you said, you read so many books. So for this to really stand out, has it changed the way you work then, Panio?
It has, in a lot of ways, because there were certain patterns that kept reoccurring that Adam Moss wrote about. You know, he says still, whether you're a painter or a chef or a playwright, right, you kind of go through the same emotional cycle. Like first, there's the excitement of starting, and then there's the inevitable kind of stumble and confusion, and then there's despair. And then if you stick with it, the kind of cycle restarts and you keep going and keep going. And so it does help me keep that in mind.
All right, so that's The Work of Art, How Something Comes from Nothing by Adam Moss. Now, Panio, you can ask me about my first top pick.
I'm very curious. What's your pick?
Okay, so I've gone with something left of field. That's just very me. So it's called The Design of Everyday Things by Don Norman, and I think it was published in 2013 is the latest version of it.
And so is it, when you say everyday things, is it like objects around the house, or are we talking everything?
It's kind of everything, but he does really focus on things like the common door. Now, there's something now called the Norman door, and it's named after him because, you know, when you go into a building and you're looking at the door and you think, do I push or do I pull? Well, Don Norman noticed that if the door is basically signaling to you that you should push it and actually you have to pull the door, then the door is not really working well. There's something in the design that's not working. And what it does is, because we normally think it's our fault when things don't work the way they should, what he did was he flipped things around so that he said, actually, why don't we look at the way the thing is designed, because it should be natural for you to work with the design of things. It's just actually really fascinating, isn't it? Like looking at things in a different way.
So did you notice that that influenced how you worked? I mean, because you're not a designer, so how would that influence you?
Aha. So it's kind of in a meta sense. Because we design everything, including work, then taking this perspective, it means that we don't have to put up with the way things are designed. It's not out of our control. Actually, we can redesign things because we designed it in the first place. And I'll give you an example. So there was a report that a big corporation was doing, and it went right up to the leader, and all the managers would spend like maybe even a day a week basically reporting top five impressive things that they did in the week, so that it would go up and be summarized for this leader. And that's a lot of time, right? Just writing a report rather than doing anything. So this was analyzed, and the question was asked to the leader, what do you do with this report? Now, the leader actually said, look, I don't read it. I don't have time. But so when we tracked it back, it was the former leader about 10 years ago who had asked for this report. So you see, that report was designed for someone else.
Right.
And so you see, you've got to ask these questions. So that's kind of the reorientation of everything. It gives you autonomy, agency, and you can apply it in little ways to the way you do things and actually say to yourself, am I designing for whom? So even when it comes to this show, who am I designing for?
That's amazing. It's funny, a lot of the books I've read about habit change make a big point about redesigning your environment to promote the habits you want and to disincentivize you from doing the habits you don't want.
Yeah, and maybe this is another example of sort of, if you read really out of your comfort zones, you know, often there's really relevant things in another person's world that are totally relevant to your world, Panio. That's what I think. So that's The Design of Everyday Things by Don Norman. So, Panio, your next pick is Cal Newport, a favourite. His book is Slow Productivity, The Lost Art of Accomplishment Without Burnout. And actually, I spoke to him. So before we talk about it, let's listen to what Cal had to say when I asked him to explain what slow productivity actually is.
Well, I think about it as a move away from busyness and towards actual results, moving towards producing things that are quality and away from just producing a lot of activity. And I think there's three key principles. So in my formal definition, I say the three things that seem to matter to make that shift is going to be doing fewer things, working at a natural pace, but at the same time also obsessing over the quality of what you do.
Such wise words. Now, I'm an A-type and I pretty much assume you are too, Panio. So tell us what this book means to you.
Yes, I'm definitely an A-type, and I get mired in sort of, I almost call it sort of like reactive productivity, where I'm just ticking, going through. And I love that feeling of just checking things off, which means I will focus on the easiest stuff most of the time, right? Because you just want to knock it out. And Cal writes a pretty persuasive argument against that, because he says, ultimately, you can just fritter away your whole day, you know, doing these kind of low importance tasks. And then the big stuff that actually matters keeps getting pushed down the road.
And so what key things have you changed as a result of this book?
So a couple. One of the big things was this idea he brings up of seasonality of real work, right? Because that's another part of productivity, this idea that we're going to refine and refine our methods until we're always, you know, sort of going 150 miles an hour and doing this beautiful work. But he talks about great work having seasons. So you have stretches of intensity and productivity, and then you have stretches of more, you know, sort of fallow periods where kind of ideas are germinating. And to me, that was a really important concept, because it's very easy to get caught up in this idea that action, action, action is what counts. But there is a benefit to also letting ideas, you know, marinate and develop.
And, you know, you mentioned that you were really productive in a certain way, Panio. Mm. Have you ever suffered from burnout and fatigue?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, very much so. It can get very existential, I'll be honest. I feel like the email inbox can be brutal. Because if you try to answer everything, and you do, right? I'll spend hours, I'll go through, and then the end of the day, and then the next day, bink, I open and suddenly I have 70 emails. And I think, oh my God, what's the point? It's like building sandcastles. Like they just get knocked over every day. And so his book was really helpful in the sense of, okay, focus on what actually matters. It's not about this arbitrary task that you've elected means that you're productive. It's actually about the things that count.
I think your experience with emails would really resonate with a lot of people. So what have you done to really change that habit of having to get to zero inbox?
I've given up on zero inbox. First off, I do star things. I do find that helps because I will have that little panic in my heart, like, oh no, I'm missing things. Really, yeah, just tackle the really big stuff. And then I do batch emailing too. That helps because that's a big thing that comes up in a lot of books as well about productivity is, you know, if you keep switching tasks, you're losing all this focus and you're losing all this attention. So I do try to say, okay, I'm going to do my emails at 3 p.m. when I'm already kind of burnt out. And then I'm going to spend, you know, an hour just kind of doing all the important ones.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. That was Slow Productivity, The Lost Art of Accomplishment Without Burnout by Cal Newport. I'm Lisa Leong. My guest is co-founder and editorial director of the Next Big Idea Club, Panio Giannopoulos. Panio, time to ask me about my next book.
I can't wait. What's your second book? I really don't know. This is exciting.
Okay. It's another really random one. This is Improv Wisdom by Patricia Ryan Madsen.
Okay. Did not see that one coming.
You know when you brainstorm with someone, Panio, and instead of supporting you, they tend to go, yes, but, and they mention all the reasons why your idea is terrible.
No, I don't know that at all. I'm just kidding.
So what improv does is it switches it up and it starts with yes and. So when people give you an idea, instead of saying yes but and coming up with why it's terrible, if you practice the art of building on that person's idea and then letting it flow, it's incredible where you can go to. Now, it's not that you don't filter, so you can filter later, but at the start, just let it go and generate as many ideas as possible and then you filter the ideas, right?
That's a huge shift.
It also is just so good when you think about teams and creating a safe space for teams as well. If you know that someone's going to back you up and actually make you look good, even in meetings, it can change things, and I've actually seen it done. So that's Improv Wisdom by Patricia Ryan Madsen as well. All right, throw me another one, Panio. What have you got?
All right, my third one is Angela Duckworth's Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance.
I might be a better starter than I am finisher, so tell me about Grit.
Well, Angela's interesting, right? So she's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. She's a co-director of the Penn Wharton Behavior Change for Good Institute. So she really, you know, this book is very much grounded in behavioral research, which I appreciate. So she talks a lot about how essentially talent matters less than consistency. And grit is more than just persevering, right? It's not quitting and finding ways to remain passionate about it. So once the novelty wears off, how do you stick with it?
Oh, that is a good question, actually, given that I'm a starter. So when you get to that lull moment, Panio, and you must get that when you're writing, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what does she suggest we do to move past that?
A lot of it is kind of getting back in touch with your original impulse. Like, what was the goal for this? It's very easy to lose sight of why you started something. And you get caught up in the process and you get caught up in your expectations and disappointments. But if you can just back away for a second and say, like, why does this even matter to me? Why did this matter in the first place? And if it doesn't matter to you anymore, you don't have to keep with it. I mean, she doesn't say just persevere for the sake of perseverance, but you have to find a way to kind of get back in touch with that initial passion if you're going to follow it through.
So tell me more then about grit and why you think this is so important to you.
When the book first came out way back in 2016, I saw Angela give a speech and she had this graph and it was about how super successful people, when you look back at their actual path to success, it is not linear at all. It is loopy and weird. It looks like, what was that kid's book, like Harold and the Purple Pencil? You know, it's like all like loopy and strange. And that really was a revelation to me. You know, our brains want to predict things. We're prediction machines. And we want patterns and we want to think, if I do this, then that's going to happen, right? But if you try to predict your life, you are going to fail miserably. You just can't. There's way too many factors. And, you know, we're too inconsistent anyway. So that to me was a big, very reassuring graph. I thought, oh, she studied all these high achievers and they come from different areas. They pick up things later. They switch careers in their 30s. So in addition to the grit part of it, I found that very reassuring to think, right, you just never know where it's going to go. So all you can do is just sort of stay passionate and committed to what you're doing and then see where you end up.
I wonder then, reflecting on that, whether my version of grit is that I do love focusing on the process rather than the outcome.
Yeah.
And so if the process is full of joy and it feels new and fresh, then that's enough for me. And that's kind of where I get to, although I think I just haven't described it as grit because it feels more like flow rather than something that, you know how grit has that kind of feeling of rubbing up against something?
friction. It's got a little, sand in your shoes kind of.
Yeah. So do you think I pass? Do you think I have grit or not?
Absolutely, you pass. Yeah, you've got it. You've got grit. Well, it's funny. One of the big books of the 21st century is James Clear's Atomic Habits, right? Sold crazy number of, and I almost picked that as one of them too. And he talks a lot about that, that goal thing where, you know, you have a goal and then you reach it and then you feel kind of deflated afterwards, right? You're like, well, now what? So, and he makes a big point of your point of, you know, stick with the process. It's all about the process. It's about having a system and a process. And that's where you should get your joy and your reward. And then you're going to hit all these goals and you'll set goals, but it's not about the goals.
I love how you snuck another book in as well, Atomic Habits by James Clear.
There's so many books in my head, I have to.
Yeah. And look, I think we should sneak that one in because actually that is like the powerhouse to make everything happen for me. So it's just building these habits, I feel, and that helps me with structure and that helps me actually achieve things.
I want to hear your third book.
Okay, let's go to my third book. So this one is The Art of Possibility, Rosamund Stone Zander and Benjamin Zander.
Is that a husband-wife team or a sister-brother team?
It's a husband-wife team. Now, Benjamin Zander is the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra, and Rosamund Zander does a lot of work in the consulting space. And so when they came together, they basically took a lot of leadership lessons from him as a conductor of an orchestra which is performing in terms of excellence, you know, top notch, right? So you can imagine if you were a player in this orchestra, there is a lot of pressure. And in fact, you know, many musicians have performance anxiety and it's pressure cooker stuff. And one of the key things for me and why I love this book so much is that Benjamin Zander said, when you make a mistake, rather than seeing it as a failure of yourself, we're going to look at it like, oh, that's really interesting. And so what he does is he has this practice of smiling, getting people to smile. You lift both hands in the air or lift a hand and you say, how fascinating, right?
Okay.
Now, I want you to try this when you're at home and maybe you're writing and instead of chastising yourself, right, when you make a mistake, I want you to try and you smile, lift both hands in the air and you say, how fascinating. And you have to do it with that accent. No, whatever accent you want. And it's incredible how it changes the energy around making a mistake.
Do you do that? Do you say how fascinating?
I do. And not only do I do it, but I often get people to pay attention to what happens when they make a mistake. So I actually used some of Dan Klein's improv and we play a game where it's a low stakes game, but people are meant to make mistakes and you observe what happens when you make a mistake. And people often will sort of freeze, they will hit themselves, they will actually shrink because they think they're going to be punished by their partner. And then you change it up. So you change how you physically respond to mistakes. I studied science and law at uni and I wasn't actually very good in the lab. So we had to do these experiments and I did organic chemistry and it's like cooking, Parnio, and I'm a terrible cook. So I had to do all these experiments twice, right? But the one thing that I learned from science is that in the lab, when you make a mistake, so when your experiment fails, you're at the edge of your hypothesis, right? So that's a good thing. You know, oh, this is the edge. But when you get a positive result, then you actually have to think, okay, so what other experiment can I run in order to get to the edge again, right? So the experiment fails, you are not a failure. Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful. What a different relationship to negative data.
And do you know what? They're the magic words. It's data, right? So I say every day is lab day. It's a bit of a mantra. If I pick up a project and I'm not having a good time, I don't worry about it. I actually go, oh, that's data. What happened that I didn't like, or why was this, you know, an experiment of failure for me? And it takes the pressure off, right?
Yeah, that internal speaking, that voice, that's a big part of what people struggle with, I've noticed. That comes up in a lot of these books. The heuristic I've heard is just try to talk to yourself the way you would talk to your best friend. You know, if your best friend failed, you wouldn't be like, you are worthless. What's wrong with you? What made you think you could do that? You would just say, hey, you know, just try again. It'd be so quick. It'd be so kind and gentle and quick. But we are so cruel to ourselves, or we can be.
Oh, well, how about life as a writer? How do you go with your self-talk then, Panio?
Well, so this is a tricky one, especially for me, because I'm both a writer and a book editor. So I spent a long time editing books, and they're very different approaches, right? One of them is this hyper-analytical, critical approach, right? And then the other one is you have to be this big, soft, gooey idea machine that's just throwing their feelings all over the page. So as much as I can, I really try to kind of bifurcate it and think when I'm drafting, you know, the editor's not allowed to come out. It's got to go stay over there. Because it's probably not going to be great the first time. It's going to be messy and sloppy and repetitive. And then, you know, I let that guy out every once in a while and he kind of like beats up the words and then he goes away and then I try again.
All right. So that one was called The Art of Possibility by Rosamund Stone Zander and Benjamin Zander. So if we had to summarize about our books, what would you say about your books, Panio?
All my three books connect around this one theme of, you know, how meaningful work actually gets made. All right. So the work of art is about starting it, you know, being bold, getting in there, don't get in your head, just try it, tinker, action, et cetera. And then slow productivity is about focusing on the important stuff and essentially staying sane and not burning out while you're doing it. And then finally, grit is about just not giving up before it gets good. Know that you have to stick with it and that it will eventually lead somewhere worthwhile. So it's the full cycle of making something, you know, making anything good.
I love that. And I wonder whether mine's about getting different perspectives from different paradigms, right? So each of these people had very different perspectives from different worlds to mine. But actually, when I looked at their perspective, I found some magic dust. And so bringing it all together, I guess that's one of my superpowers, is that I can get all these really disparate things and think, oh, that totally applies if we put it together like alchemy in a pot. In the pot is work, right?
Well, it's your organic chemistry. Come back. You've got one beaker of design, one beaker of improv, and one beaker of high performance.
I knew I did that science degree for something, Panio. Thank you. What a legend you are. Thank you so much. I love chatting with you. I always love chatting with you. And thank you for reading all of those books so that you could give me your top three picks.
Oh, it was my pleasure. This is really fun. I always love talking about books with you.
Panio Giannopoulos is the co-founder and editorial director of the Next Big Idea Club. You can find Panio's picks and mine as well on our website. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nam, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast, share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.